Morris Misilowski, you're a business futurist and an innovator, and you keep an eye on technology, and one of the things that seems to be coming up is 3D printing. Now, in Melbourne, I know that that's been going for some time, 10 years or so. You know, Mark Gurry at RMIT with his Gaudi pieces, and he and his wife. So how do you see it? I mean, you talk about you can 3D print a human ear, you can 3D print maybe a crankshaft and an engine. I don't know. What's possible? Where is it at?
Well, both of those things are possible, and you're absolutely right. It's been talked about for about 15, 20 years at least. It's that beam me up, Scotty technology that everyone's ever dreamed about, having an object and then being able to make a copy of it. The difference, of course, with 3D technology is that we don't beam me up and it doesn't disappear. It actually stays where it is. It makes an exact replica of whatever it's taken a copy of and then makes a copy of that, pretty much like the fax machine of the 1980s. And it's been talked about, as I said, for a couple of decades now. But in the last 6 months, 12 months, there's been a plethora of 3D faxes that have come to the market or to prototype. And we're beginning to see 3D fax or 3D printing across all elements, literally from children's toys. And you can buy quite a cheap 3D printer for about $700 that will give you the equivalent of a Lego toy that you can produce and then print out of. Right through the sophisticated technologies around bioprinting, which is the printing of organs, hearts and ears, as you said, noses, those sorts of things that we're most probably 5 to 10 years away at least from bringing to market and making it an everyday occurrence. Right through, as you said again, to machine parts and pretty much anything that we can imagine at this stage.
The issue though is, why has it occurred so rapidly over the last 6 months? Because it's been around for years.
It has. To me, one of the reasons is really going back out of 3D printing land into technology, into innovation. We had not a lot of money over the last few years, and we saw money coming out of innovation, coming out of prototyping, coming out of all those areas. And over the last 18 to 24 months, I've seen money starting to come back in. A lot of conversations around venture capital, around angel investment, around crowdfunding, of course, and those sorts of things. I think it's the money that's brought it to the fore now. We had the technology, kind of people had to sit on it for a while because they couldn't get the funding and the thought around it. All of a sudden there's an appetite again to invest. Money's gone in. We've seen this industry in particular take off. And for many people it seems like a fairly safe bet, not that we ever had one in technology, but it seems like a fairly safe bet that if we can make this work, it has to be a technology and an industry that has legs in it.
So, explain, I mean, Xerox copy is 2D, we understand. You use paper, you use a drum and you use a toner. How do you make a metallic part or a plastic part for an ear? What's the process? How does it work?
Yeah, the process really is like Beta and VHS at this stage. There's wars going on as to how it will eventually be. It seems to me that I don't think we'll have one definitive methodology of doing it. There will be a number of them, and it will really depend on what the end product is. There's basically two camps at this stage. There's an additive and a subtractive one. An additive is where things are put together, so very much like a dot matrix printer of old. Whatever it is you put in there, whether it's a plastic resin or whether it's a glass resin or something else, they literally build dot by dot by dot and eventually come out to something that resembles and is useful and purposeful as whatever the item is. For instance, a glass might be built that way, a physical glass that we drink from could be built that way. And then you've got the subtractive one where you put in perhaps a lump of something. It might be a lump of wood or it might be a lump of plastic, and it will carve it out to the end purpose. So they're the two basic camps with a lot more technology and big words around how they work.
So you need pretty good computing power to drive what may well be a computer-guided lathe to make a crankshaft, say.
Yeah, absolutely. It's in many ways building on the 3D imaging that we've had before, the CAD machines that engineers and others have used for so long. It's taking that and taking it forward a couple of steps, and then, as you said, being able to output that to some sort of a device, which at this stage, most of them look fairly awful, fairly crude. They're big boxes, you know, nothing fancy about them. They're still too early to be anything that's really commercially sexy. But a big box that will do the output, as you've said.
So what we're talking about is, for example, this Macintosh that I'm using to record this interview is the body is carved out of a single piece of aluminium to extreme precision. And that would be fall within the 3D printing.
Absolutely, that will be something that we can do. The 3D printing is interesting, not only for what it can do for us, but how it's going to revolutionise the way that we engage with the world, the way that the individual will purchase products, want products, and what they'll be able to do with them. And the computer is a perfect example of that. That what we most probably will be given in a not too distant future is what I'm calling a recipe. That is, this is what the item could look like. And then you're able then to put your own thoughts, your own colours, your own embellishments on it, and it will then print it within the guidelines of what your computer should be, with the added dimensions of these colours and textures and whatever else you want it to be, and it will print just in time, which is something corporations have had forever, going back to the 60s we should say, but in the hands of the individual, just in time has not been something we've had for a very long time.
But of course something like that would totally transform manufacturing, wouldn't it? And it could potentially marginalise manufacturing even further.
You're absolutely right. It does have the possibilities of doing that. I'm always an optimist, and I think what we're going to do is see great innovation around what manufacturing can be and what it is. Manufacturing, as we've known, is a difficult thing to describe into the future because it really was part of the Industrial Revolution. It was part of the way that we gave ourselves product. It was part of the way that we serviced ourselves. Moving forward, we're seeing already that the old paradigms of manufacturing aren't suiting us as well. We're of course seeing manufacturing in Australia diminishing by the day, and that's not a good thing, and not for a moment do I like that, but it is the reality. We're going to see that the manufacturing industry, I think, will move away from the physical box, which is a strange thing to say about manufacturing, and more into the innovation, more into what might we produce, with the end product being produced maybe in a 3D printer or something similar.
So, but you're not suggesting, are you, that the average, you know, Joe Soap would have a printer, and if he wants a deck of playing cards or some other product, he just downloads the software and prints the thing out?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Huh? I think within 10, 15 years it will be quite common for most households, especially in the Western world and beyond, to have a 3D printer of some kind. We're talking about a retail evolution where what you will buy is not a dinner set. You won't go into a department store and buy a dinner set, for instance. What you'll do is you'll dial up on the internet and you'll find the pattern that you want and the rights to be able to reproduce. And again, then make the embellishments that you want on that dinner set to suit your own colour and style and print it in your own home. If you break one piece of crockery, just go back to the manufacturer, get the rights to reproduce that one piece and wear it out of your machine within 10 minutes.
So you'd produce a plastic version of a porcelain plate, though, would?
No, it'd be porcelain. It would be exactly as you've seen it.
So how do you cook it in a kiln?
Again, these are things that we still need to work through. So it may not be in the exact way that we see it now, because you're right, it might have to go through. It does have to go through a kiln now. But into the future, it might be from a different product. It might be from a clay product. But we will be able to reproduce in our own home if we want to, or in some centralised environment.
Maurice Sorkles, thank you very much.
Thank you, Maurice.
You're welcome.